Here at Cardinal News, we believe facts matter, and so does your support. As an independent, nonprofit newsroom, we're committed to bringing you in-depth, fact-based reporting about Southwest and Southside Virginia. It's the kind of reporting you won't find anywhere else. If our stories have informed, inspired, or even surprised you this year, consider supporting our work. Every contribution helps keep this kind of local news strong. You can give today at cardinalnews.org/membership. Hello and welcome to the Cardinal News of Virginia, a podcast from Cardinal News. We're a nonprofit independent newsroom serving Southwest and Southside Virginia at cardinalnews.org. I'm Lisa Rowan. The Cardinal Podcast is sponsored by Muneris, serving communities with expert group benefits and Medicare solutions. Today, we're joined by technology reporter Tad Dickens. Tad has spent a few months exploring the Commonwealth Cyber Initiative and some of the cybersecurity projects taking place at colleges and universities in our region. We'll have more about Tad's travels on our website soon. Tad, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's always good to see you, Lisa.
Let's start with the Commonwealth Cyber Initiative, which I could barely say as we started because there's a lot of C's in there. It's called CCI. You describe it as Virginia's hub for all things cybersecurity. What's the goal of this initiative?
Well, I think the main goal is to try to accomplish, better results in cybersecurity, try to fund a lot of research projects, try to work with higher educational institutes in the region or throughout the state to develop projects that hopefully will, make the cyber world a little safer for you and me and everybody else.
Is this a new initiative? I know cybersecurity has been top of mind for a lot of folks in the technology field and beyond it for, several years as I guess criminals get smarter and threats get more savvy. So is this a new initiative or is this something the Commonwealth has been doing for a while?
Well, it is relatively new, but it was passed through the legislature in 2018 and signed into law then. And over the next year or so beyond that, there were groups convened to try to decide exactly what this was going to be. So they finally got a plan together, kind of kicked off in fiscal year 2020. And you can kind of look at its growth between then and the last year that I've seen numbers for was fiscal year 2024. But they were able to develop, about $30-some million in funding in 20, about the same amount in 21 and 22. Then the next year, it jumped up to $75 million in funding, and in 2024, more than $100 million in funding for a variety of projects across the Commonwealth. I focused for this story on what they call the Southwest Node, which is really Southwest Virginia and Southside. Part of Southside is subsumed into the Central Node, but everybody's got their different idea of what a region is. So anyway, there's about 17 higher education institutions, colleges, community colleges, universities who are participating in this. And they're teaming up with private businesses and they're teaming up with them each other. A lot of cross-university kind of work to do research and development of different cyber tools, cybersecurity tools, AI tools, since that's come on the scene, that's become a big part of what they're trying to deal with because that can be a part of cybersecurity as well. People can use AI to develop very quickly tools that could hack, say, a quantum computer whenever that's developed. And so people are actually looking ahead and trying to work with those permutations to figure out what they might be dealing with even up ahead years in the future.
And Virginia Tech serves as the Southwest Virginia node for CCI. That's what we usually think of as, you know, the biggest research university in our region, but they're, you know, sort of connecting all of these other schools, it sounds like, for projects. What's Virginia Tech's role in this collaboration?
I think just to maybe simplify it for, you know, organizational purposes, they made an institute in each zone as the central hub of it. And they pretty much, you know, if you're a regional institute, if you're VMI, if you're, you know, Virginia Western, you go through Virginia Tech and work to get grants there. And of course, they're all working together on projects as well.
Okay. Speaking of VMI, one of the projects that stood out to you is at the Virginia Military Institute in Lexington. Tell us about the virtual water treatment plant.
Yeah, well, they have a ton of stuff going on there. And in fact, there's no way that this piece that I've done will possibly address everything that's happening in the region. But the one that sort of kind of stuck out to me because it involves something that, you know, actually could be a thing and people have attempted it before is hack into water systems, hack into water treatment systems, and like inundate them with chlorine from the system, using the system to attack itself while making, you know, while keeping all the meters like running clean, like you don't know that, you know, by looking at the meters that a bunch of chlorine is being dumped into the system. And then that's going out into the river, which, you know, that's an incredibly bad thing for not just the wildlife, but anybody, you know, then taking that water upstream for any purpose. So they've actually built and are working on this whole like smart town. They've got smart houses, they've got smart buildings, and they built this smart water treatment plant. It was a professor, Muhammad Azab, and like over the past, I think, 2.5 years, cadets who have passed through the institute have been working on this thing. And they have come up with, like, it's a big box that, you know, you can see in there, and it's got like, it's a little tiny water plant. It's based on the main water treatment plant in Roanoke, and a cadet or a researcher will put on virtual reality goggles and they can then pretend to be an employee in that plant, where another cadet or teacher or researcher of some sort is hacking into the system and making the chlorine spill in. The student that's got the goggles on has to figure it out and take measures to prevent the attack. So, or at least ameliorate the effects of it. Make sure that water doesn't leave the plant and go into, say, the river or reservoir that it was intended for.
So they're doing this sort of simulation where in real time they can respond to perceived threats, figure out what they would do in sort of that situation. It's a real world application of what this sort of infrastructure attack might look like. And I know that the Institute has worked with the Western Virginia Water Authority on this project, right? They're involved as well.
They are. There are a couple things from that. One of them has, you know, led them to build this virtual water plant that is very, very close to the broad strokes of, you know, what you would actually find in the water plant and the treatment plant in Roanoke. And the other aspect of it that they're working on that hasn't really gone all the way through yet, that is in sort of the development pipeline, is to build a sort of database. Maybe it's an AI agent. Maybe it's just a hard drive full of like institutional knowledge. They found that as people retire after having long careers in the water treatment plant, they're taking all their understanding of the bits and pieces, nuts and bolts, the ins and outs of this treatment plant, and nobody's picking up on that knowledge. A new employee might come in later and there's no overlap. They don't get the benefit of that information. So Dr. Zob said that they're looking to build this system that could be an agent where, or like a GPT, where somebody is new to the plant and they have a problem, they don't understand something, and they can refer, even talk to the system and then get an answer. You know, and you hope that it doesn't hallucinate, of course. So as Jethro Bodine said in the Beverly Hillbillies, that's one of the kinks they ain't got worked out yet, I'm sure. So anyway, it's all kind of cool stuff that they're working on. And that was the one that kind of grabbed me. I remember a few years ago in Florida, there was an attempt to hack on a water system there and do real damage that could have hurt people pretty badly, and it was stopped. But I guess for whatever reason, there's always some jerk out there trying to get over. So
yeah,
on the sort of more micro level, they have a smart house. And, you know, everything's connected to the internet now. So they're looking from your smartphone to your microwave oven, whatever, this house, they're looking to prevent threats from impinging upon just your everyday living because you wanted to have a toaster that was hooked up to the internet of things.
And that's at VMI as well, right? The cadets are working on this smart house.
Yeah. That's also at VMI. Yeah, they've got a whole... You know, they're going to eventually have a smart city. Well, cool. Yeah, really fun to watch and work on.
It's interesting to understand how projects are trying to use artificial intelligence to solve some of these problems, like those knowledge gaps in between sort of generations of workers. It's, you know, maybe it's, we talk about AI hallucinating, maybe it's not trustworthy yet, but by experimenting and iterating with it, organizations might be able to have it sort of as a backstop if they have a gap in that worker knowledge. So that's really interesting to see them testing that.
At the very least, I think, you could just do it as a search engine.
Yeah.
I mean, those things don't seem to have hallucinated that much. But as you and I both know, there's all kinds of BS on the internet. So it's very easy when you know, a GPT is scraping everything from the internet, that there's just going to be so much garbage. Maybe you can have a more, you know, centralized, more focused employee handbook of sorts. That,
for sure.
That is not as prone to hallucination. I don't know. I'm just speculating now.
Yeah. No, something that's reliable when you're searching, when you need information fast, right? That's not when you, if there's a threat to your water system, you don't want to be going to Google to try to find, you know, solutions to that. You want the internal solutions and the internal knowledge for sure.
Yeah. How do I prevent chlorine attack?
If you're Googling that, you're in trouble. You are in trouble.
Bad news. Now, that said, they over at VMI, they have a lot of respect for the folks at the water authority, or at the water treatment plant. And I'm sure they consider them to be experts in what they're doing, but they're looking ahead to when longtime employees leave and sell no stuff. It's like, where's the Allen wrench, right? Where's the box of Allen wrenches? I don't know.
That's exactly. You also took a trip out to WISE to learn about a cybersecurity project at the University of Virginia's College at WISE. What are those students working on? This is another road trip that you took.
Yeah. There's been a couple of projects that are focused on helping businesses in that area manage their cybersecurity. And they had students and professors go to several different businesses and kind of analyze what they had there and what they were working with. And the thing that was interesting is, you know, a lot of times nowadays, when you're going to buy something, you will have it go through like something that attaches to a smartphone, a little swiping device or whatever, things like that are making contact with all kinds of different cards and gathering all kinds of information can be susceptible. So they spent some time. It was interesting, though, a little interesting backstory. I was hoping that in that trip, I would be able to learn something from the circuit court clerk's office there, because they had actually taken part in this research program, and the group from UVA Wise went to the court and they advised them on cybersecurity. And then there was an election and a new person was put in office, and that person just like cleaned house. Nobody's left from there. And so there's really that sort of a report is probably, according to Karen Carter, who's one of the professors down there at Wise, it's not looking like that was going to be implemented at all. So,
oh no,
it's more of a story about sort of the transient nature of politics and the political offices and what somebody coming in with an agenda will value or not value. And who knows if that report will ever be used, but anyway, that was among the people that they talked to, and they went over to a winery also. And I got to visit that winery.
Nice.
Yes, yes. And over a glass of a Pinot Noir, discussed a little bit about their cybersecurity. And they have, just your basic card reader, chip reader thing. And they have a whole report. I have down here this binder that I'm not going to read to you now, but it's got all these recommendations. And so the point is that they're really using these grants that they received to be busy in their community. It's more sort of real stuff. It's not this sort of high level, crazy, spy versus spy, international craziness. It's just like what happens at your point of sale, et cetera, for a local business out in the middle of, it's way closer to my home that I grew up in Kingsport, Tennessee, than it is to Roanoke. Way out there in, Wise County, they're regular people who have businesses and have these same kind of concerns that, the large Delta Dentals of the world who are getting hacked on the regular, and clearly don't appear to have taken, great steps to prevent those attacks. Well, here's a
allegedly small... they haven't taken great steps to prevent those attacks. We just will say allegedly. We can't make any statements on that.
I can offer my opinion on that. I guess maybe I shouldn't do it, but I will say that I always give a side eye to the statement. We take the security of our clients' personal information very seriously. I see that and I'm like, oh, they must have been hacked.
Well, tell me about the reaction of some of the businesses that the students in Wise have worked with, because I was out in Wise this summer and it's a rural place, right? They're cybersecurity professionals can work anywhere because a lot of this is remote, but Wise Virginia is not teaming with cybersecurity companies, right? So when the students want to work with a company like this winery, what sort of reception are they receiving? Are business owners open to this kind of analysis of their internal workings?
Yeah, well, aside from the circuit court clerk's office, which is sort of a limbo situation, they were really well received. And the owner of the winery was like, they were great. These students were very inquisitive, very helpful, very open to my questions. And they, were able to provide her with some help that she's working to implement.
That's awesome. So it's
a good relationship there. I think one of the things that I could say about that is that the university is so deeply enmeshed in that community there. It's the same sort of on their sort of population level the same sort of relationship I think that Blacksburg and Roanoke residents have with Virginia Tech and the different aspects of Virginia Tech that are in Roanoke, for example, Franklin Medical Research Institute, very well ensconced. There's people are aware.
One last CCI project that we'll mention is definitely all about community. It is a living learning community at Virginia Tech, a residence hall section devoted to cybersecurity. What is it like living there? Did you go visit this dorm?
Yeah, I went over there, and it's actually they wanted to keep the dorm setting more private for the students. So I didn't meet the students in the dorm. I met them in places where they were meeting because they were putting together a project. An exhibit for the university library that was going to sort of give students an example of their daily interactions with surveillance, and they were looking to put together a webcam or a cam that would track students as they were coming through the library, in a kiosk that they could interact with to sort of say, this recorded your entrance and exit, blah, 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 that sort of stuff. Working to do something to sort of make students not take for granted the amount of surveillance that they're under, I guess.
And this is something that they're doing in their spare time, or are they doing this in conjunction with classwork?
They are doing it in their spare time because the love of the game. I mean, all the folks that are in the living learning community, and this is called Securitas, all but one of them are computer science students. There's one graphic design student who is also there. They're all looking for careers and more knowledge about computer science, cybersecurity, all the iterations of ways you can make a living now dealing with computers and the internet. And so that's like sort of you've written some about living learning communities, haven't you?
Yeah, they're very popular at Virginia Tech. There are, probably like 24 of them. And some of them have more than 100 students who live in sort of a concentrated area in residence hall so that they can be sort of immersed in, I would call them an affinity group, but more like an interest topic.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's an interest topic. You're very good at boiling this stuff down. You want to write this story? I'd love it if you just take what I've written and rewrite it.
Sometimes that's all you need, is for someone else to look at your notes and boil it down. You know, you can get sort of in the weeds, especially when this is a project you've been working on for a couple of months that has involved like going around to different places and seeing things in person. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about how being able to see things in person, meet students in person, see these projects, how that's a little bit different than maybe doing a phone interview with someone. What's the experience like for you as a reporter doing that?
I guess really it works the same in almost every aspect of reporting. If you're actually meeting them and being around them, you get so much more of an idea of individual vibes and group dynamics. And like, for instance, the living learning kids, so bright, the Securitas group, so bright and super engaged. And like I said, they're not doing it for class credit. They're doing it because they love it. They seem to really enjoy being around each other and collaborating. And probably the best aspect of all of it to see was to watch the collaboration and people not talking over each other and not trying to compete in a sense, but really looking to develop something that I think they're gonna unveil it at the beginning of next semester. So the story will have already been out, but I may try to wander down there and see what this ultimately looks like. But it just seemed like, and felt like, this is going to be a cool project. And so you get that feeling much more so than talking to people on the phone. And so whenever I can get out there and make a road trip, I want to do it. It's great. And you never know what you're going to wind up seeing or doing. You never know if you're going to wind up at a vineyard in Wise or something like that.
Yeah, I always find that when I get to meet students in person or visit a campus in person, there's an energy there that is almost contagious. I come home feeling sort of energized and inspired. And if you get to stop somewhere along the way and get some good food to eat and, you know, do a review video from your car, that's just a bonus.
Yeah, that's those things are fun too. And you don't have a test, not being tested right. on. Although apparently I did have to write an essay.
That is the nature of our job, is that we always end up having to write an essay after the field trip.
There is a written assignment, several thousand words.
Ted, we are looking forward to seeing this work on the webpage, on our cardinalnews.org website, so people can read more about your adventures. How can readers reach you in the meantime?
Well, you can reach me really easily by email. Our cardinal addresses are so easy. It's T-A-D, Tad, at cardinalnews.org. It's just very easy. And, you know, you're Lisa, and it's possible that there will be another Lisa one day. And I wonder if we hire, because we got two openings, if we hire another Lisa, what's that going to be like? How's that, Lisa one, Lisa two?
She's going to be out of luck. She's going to have to change her name, you know?
Right. Make it all legal. Let's go down and have a legal name change strictly for the purpose of working for Cardinal News.
You know, luckily that decision is well above my pay grade. Ted, thanks so much.
I only like to joke about those things. I don't like to actually do anything about them or think about them. That's not the fun part. But
Ted, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thanks, Lisa. It's fun.
And thank you for listening to the Cardinal News of Virginia. Thanks to our sponsor, Muneris, to Sean Eddy of Eddy Alexander for production support, and to Cardinal News' own Zach Shelton. Read all of our paywall-free local news coverage at cardinalnews.org. I'm Lisa Rowan. Take care now.